AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
From the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Good day and welcome to the weekend. Glad you made it here. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your red state refugee, sitting in the chair here in Portland, Oregon, bringing you some radical progressive talk. What does that mean? Well, it just means we get to talk about the situations and the issues that are affecting us here in our day-to-day existence in the neocon nightmare brought about by George W. Bush and the Cheney-Burton maladministration. We got some serious topics to cover. We also have a little bit of fun while we're doing it, so we hope you'll all enjoy it and join us on the telephones if you want to get involved. Our phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. We got 5 hours of show and 2 hours to get it all in, so we better get started. And joining us as always from across the continent, over there in Washington, D.C., manning the phones and the boards, our man from across the pond, the man who's having a hat and scarf when he's telling me to shut my festering gob because I'm a Maffy chap when I'm banjaxed. It's our own Stevie Webb from London.
I don't even know what any of that means. Finally, you got me on that.
If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that at the top of the show, I always try to pull up some Cockney slang. And I guess this is the first time
always
I stumped you.
Makes me feel totally at home. But seriously, I'm thinking, you just made that up. That came off the top of your head. That didn't mean anything.
I swear to you, it was in the Google, man.
It was in the Google. Oh, yeah. Well, if it was in the Google, then.
Yeah, banjaxed apparently means to be drunk or stoned.
Mm-hmm. Well, give me that one again. I want to see if I just missed something there.
The man who's having a hat and scarf.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes.
Having a laugh.
Having a
right?
laugh, yes.
When telling me to shut my festering gob.
Yes, indeed.
My mouth, right?
Yes.
Because I'm a Maffy chap.
Maffy. I think that's what threw me.
Yeah, down. Mouthy, I guess that means.
Oh, right.
And then when I'm banjaxed, so
yes.
Drunk or stoned. So
yes.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that to me, the British person.
Got to explain it to the British guy, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're having some fun. Stevie sent me some pictures, too, from his wedding.
Hey,
we talked about that last week, and I might have to post them up on RadicalRust.com. If you can get your wife's permission, I'd love to do that.
Oh, hey, no problem. No problem. I will sort that out.
Yeah, it was a Zoot Suit wrestling wedding. So
there you go, listeners.
You got to see the pictures to believe it.
Here he is. See if you can top that.
Yeah, coming into our country and ruining the concept of marriage, you know, denigrating it. You know, after Britney Spears went and made it such a pristine such a pristine thing to get involved with.
Exactly.
Marriage,
you know. And of course her lovely sister there who managed to you know, she just got it slightly wrong. She just got it slightly backwards.
Just slightly wrong.
Have a baby, then get married. There you go.
That's America.
You can't win them all, can you? There you go, Michael Savage. Have a look at my wedding pictures and just be in pain.
That's right. And we've got some Michael Savage coming up later on the show. All sorts of great stuff coming up on today's show. In our big story, we're going to take a look at more Christian supremacy movement here in America, featuring that shooting in the church, as well as the Bush administration's efforts now to get some forms of birth control defined as if they were abortion.
That's right.
In our Under the Radar segment, we'll be talking about the suicide of the suspected anthrax scientist, the suspect here in the case when the anthrax was delivered to congressmen and to Tom Brokaw back in 2001. You'll remember that.
It's all gone very X-Files, hasn't it?
It sure has.
Yes.
And in our Living in America segment coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Walmart and how they are possibly convincing their employees that a vote for Barack Obama would be bad for their jobs because he would be too pro-union. That'll be an interesting take there. And all of our other things as usual, like the Lunatic Fringe, will be bringing you the latest in right-wing talk radio and some of the awful things they're saying out there on that side of the dial. But the biggest thing for today's show, and I'm really, really proud of this, is that we will be having a special guest joining us in our second hour. We've got an interview with Congressman Barney Frank, the Democrat from Massachusetts. This Wednesday, Congressman Frank introduced a new bill called H.R. 5843, which is a bill to end federal penalties on the personal possession of marijuana by responsible adults. Is it another hallelujah? Yeah, talk about banjaxed. We'll be talking to Congressman Frank in our next hour, and we'll discuss with you at 888-7-RADICAL whether you think that's a good idea or not. So stay tuned for that. But before we get to all of that, it has been quite a busy week. A lot of stories in the news, and I know that a lot of you are like me. You don't always have time to catch up on the newspaper, the evening news, because you got to work for a living. You got 40 hours you got to put in. Some of you putting in two or three jobs just to get by in this economy. So at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with
The Week in 90 Seconds.
John W. McCain compares Barack Obama to Britney Spears. A top suspect in the 2001 anthrax attacks commits suicide.
Some of this anthrax may have come from Iraq.
Walmart tells its employees a vote for Obama is a vote for unions.
Look for the union label.
Only 13 troops died in Iraq last month, but 30 troops died in Afghanistan, the third straight month where more died there than Iraq.
But always remember this. Marines die. That's what we're here for.
A Michael Wiener Savage fan shoots up a church in Tennessee for being too liberal.
The children's minds are being raped by the homosexual mafia.
ExxonMobil nets an $11.68 billion profit in the second quarter, an all-time record. Alaska Senator Ted Stevens is indicted for corruption as his re-election chances go right down the truck.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
If you travel, Homeland Security may copy your entire laptop, cell phone, and PDA without cause and without warrant.
Logs access. Transfer of data is complete.
Los Angeles gets hit by an earthquake.
Rams plagued by fumbles as earthquakes rock Los Angeles. Film at 11.
And water is proven to exist on Mars.
The Rhodium Q36 explosive space modulator. That creature has stolen the space modulator.
Well, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to find that water exists on Mars. I mean, they've been theorizing it for years now, but nice to finally have the proof. Of course,
it is.
We find water, that means that's a much better chance of finding life. And, you know, we're all looking out for intelligent life somewhere out in space because there's bugger on down here on Earth. Yes.
Hey!
All right. So let's get to some of these news stories here. And the one that I thought was kind of funny this week, at the beginning of the week, we had John W. McCain coming out with that ad. You know, McCain... McCain must be feeling awfully lonely and unappreciated with all the attention that Barack Obama got for his trip to the Middle East and to Europe. And, of course, out there in Germany, he was greeted by a crowd of 200,000 people all cheering him on. And so McCain, his campaign, first of all, I got a question why you would want to put together an ad showing your opponent being popular and well-liked and loved. I wonder about that. You know, Leslie Stahl, who is the correspondent for 60 Minutes, often recounts a tale where she had put together this hard-hitting expose on Ronald Reagan. And it showed all these scenes of Ronald Reagan, you know, talking to people and flag in the background and speeches and so on. And meanwhile, the ad is talking about how bad Reagan was and all, or is. And later on, when Leslie Stahl met with one of his campaign people, she expected this guy to kind of berate her for doing such a hard-hitting piece on Ronald Reagan. The guy actually thanked her. He said, thanks a lot for that ad because the pictures that were in it were so positive toward Reagan, you know, showing him all these pictures of people and, you know, shaking his hand, him smiling, and as all this positive imagery. And he points out that, you know, hardly anybody ever hears the words in the ad. They pay attention to the images. So when I saw that Britney Spears, Paris Hilton, you know, Barack Obama celebrity ad, you know, if you turn the sound on, it looks, you know, Barack Obama looks great. He's got crowds of 200,000 looking at him and people smiling and so on. And that's something else to take a look at, too. My wife and I were discussing this the other day. We were taking a look. We were watching one of the cable news networks, and it was a speech by John McCain. He's at a town hall somewhere. It doesn't matter where, but he's at this town hall meeting, and we had the sound off, and because we were talking to each other, and we had the sound off, and my wife points out, she goes, "Hey, look at the screen. Tell me what you see on that screen." And as I looked, you know, I saw McCain first, right? But then I started looking at the people in the background, and man, what a sad, bored, not very interested group of people, right? You know, looking off into space, they got kind of their arms folded, and, you know, not really paying that much attention. And then later on in the show, whatever we were watching, there was a film of Obama speaking. And again, we still have it on mute, right? And my wife, again, points out, she goes, "Now look at that picture." And so I look, and again, you look at the people in the background, engaged, eyes, you know, anticipating every word he's going to say, you know, smiles. So just take a look at the body language in some of these pictures that you're seeing on the TV between the Obama appearances and the McCain appearances. It's just sad and pathetic for poor John W. McCain, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, I can't wait until we get to the debates. Can you just imagine the scene of John McCain and Barack Obama standing side by side? Oh, it's going to be such a stark contrast. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a landslide election here for Barack Obama.
Standing side by side until John McCain needs a nice sit down in the sun. A cup of warm, milky tea.
There we go. So he puts out this ad, right? This is the celebrity ad. Let me just play this for you real quick here.
He's the biggest celebrity in the world.
And that's where they show, you know, Paris and Britney, the pictures of Paris and Britney.
Is he ready to lead? With gas prices soaring, Barack Obama says no to offshore drilling and says he'll raise taxes on electricity.
Yeah, and so you've seen the ad, right, with the Paris and the Britney. So it led me to thinking here, you know, just how are Barack Obama and Britney Spears alike? And so I came up with a few ideas. First of all, Barack Obama and Britney Spears both have two kids. I got that, right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Britney was in the Mickey Mouse Club, and Barack Obama has Mickey Mouse ears. So you got that going. Yeah, that's something there, right?
Again, good thinking.
Britney sometimes leaves the house without underpants, and Barack sometimes likes to go commando. No, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I don't think that's accurate. I got to fire my researcher on that one. I don't.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. But here's the number one way in which Barack Obama and Britney Spears are alike. Either one of them would be a better president than John W. McCain. All right, so this is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. It's 18 after the hour. When we come back, we're going to take a look at Christian supremacy and take your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. This is the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Radical Russ now at 1-888-7-RADICAL. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, welcome back. It's 23 after the hour, and now it's time for a little bit of our look at Christian supremacy in America.
We allowed the judges to drive God out of our school.
All I can tell you is that I'm very proud to have Pastor John Hagee's support.
We are a pagan nation where we're rebirthing Sodom and Gomorrah.
Thank you, Dr. Falwell.
Thank you, Liberty University class of 2006.
That the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
But I believe it's a lot easier.
That's right. We take a look at Christian supremacy here in our big story. And this is something I've been covering for quite a bit here on the Russ Belville Show. And before we do, let's just get the disclaimer out there. This is not an anti-religion screed. All my family are good, God-fearing Christians. I got nothing against that. It's this idea that America needs to become, or supposedly is, a Christian nation, and everybody must follow the dictates of Christianity. Like I say, your freedom to religion ends where my freedom of thought begins. And so one of the things I wanted to point out in this campaign, there's been a lot of John W. McCain flip-flopping on the Christian evangelism type of issue here. You know, he famously had said that Reverend Falwell and people like that were agents of intolerance. That was back in 2000 when he was running against W. But, of course, come 2006, 2007, when he needs those right-wing guano loco American Taliban-type votes, he's flip-flopped and embraced the people like Pastor Hagee and Rod Parsley and so on. So part of this, I wanted to bring this up. We had talked earlier about the John W. McCain celebrity ad with Britney Spears. There's another ad that's out, and I think this is a web-only ad, but this is another ad that is out there, and it uses what we call, you know, dog whistle phrases. The idea in that in politics is that you can say certain things that most people aren't going to hear. They're not going to know what it means. But for a certain segment of the audience, you're using code words that they completely tune into. And this happens a lot when they're casting these ads to try to bring in the religious conservatives. This is an ad called The One, and I'm going to play this one for you and give this a listen. See if you can pick out some of the dog whistle code religious phrases in here.
It shall be known that in 2008 the world will be blessed. They will call him The One.
A nation healed. A world repaired. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
And he has anointed himself, ready to carry the burden of the one. To quote Barack, I have become a symbol of America returning to our best traditions. He can do no wrong.
Do you have any doubts?
Never. Can you see the light?
A light will shine down from somewhere. It will light upon you. You will experience an epiphany, and you will say to yourself, I have to vote for Barack.
And the world shall receive his blessings.
This was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow, and our planet began to heal.
Behold his mighty hand.
Barack Obama may be the one, but is he ready to lead?
Okay, so maybe not so much dog whistle. There was a whole lot in there. Anointed and the light would shine down and so on. That's not so subtle. But this part about the one, this is something you really need to pay attention to in this ad. John W. McCain is reaching out to the evangelical community by basically baiting Barack Obama, or painting him as the Antichrist. That's the dog whistle message behind that ad. See, the one in this evangelical rapture right type of mythology is the idea of this Antichrist who would appear and be popular and everybody would love him and he'd bring the world together, one world order, all of that kind of nonsense. And this code here is something that's really, really popular amongst the evangelical community, especially when you start taking a look at what they're reading. You may have heard of the Left Behind series by Tim LaHaye. And the Left Behind series is all of this stuff about the rapture coming and how there's going to be an end times and so on. And also, The Late Great Planet Earth. You may have heard of that book back from, a couple decades ago. This was written by a guy named Hal Lindsey, this Late Great Planet Earth. And on the same day that this ad appears, The One, talking about Barack Obama, this Lindsey posts on WorldNet Daily, or as we call it, WingNet Daily, which is the website for all of these guano loco American Taliban out there. He writes this. He says, Obama's world tour provided a foretaste of the reception he can expect to receive. He will probably also stand in some European capital, expecting a wild greeting. And then here's the money quote here. The Bible calls that leader the Antichrist, and it seems apparent that the world is now ready to make his acquaintance. So this is the latest salvo from the McCain campaign, painting Barack Obama as the Antichrist. And it's just hard to believe that he would go this far. You know, McCain was saying all this time that he was wanting to have a campaign that was above the fray and wouldn't engage in these kind of attacks. It's sick. And we need to counteract this. How do we counteract this attack? How do we turn to the religious community and counteract all these Muslim rumors and all of this Antichrist talk? It's disgusting, and I'm sick that our politics has descended to this. Now, when we come back from the break, we'll take a look at more of that and some news on the anthrax suicide. This is the Russ Belville Show. It's 29 after the hour.
And 620KPOJ.com.
The voice of the everyday American. It's time for Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. It's 35 after the hour. We're talking a little bit about the Christian supremacy movement here in America.
Don't you blaspheme in here. Don't you blaspheme in here.
No, we're not blaspheming in here. All we're talking about here is this movement to use the hateful side of religion in our political and daily commerce here.
Get the hell out of my house. In Jesus' name, I pray. Get out!
Yes, get out. Yes, I played for you the ad last segment of the John W. McCain ad here that uses a lot of this Antichrist imagery, painting Barack Obama as the anointed one, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, a lot of folks that are, you know, sane and rational, and I'm even talking about, you know, regular old religious folks, are not going to, you know, see this as being a big deal. But you got to remember, there is a sizable proportion of people out in America who really believe this stuff. They really believe this end times dominionist thinking, this idea that there's going to be an Antichrist come up. They believe this prophecy that all of the Jewish people have to take the entire state of Israel before Jesus can come back down and have the whole, you know, the whole story. So this is
Double
a series.
Yeah. They've really got to be scraping the bottom of the barrel to be throwing the Antichrist card at him, seriously.
The Antichrist card, yeah.
What's next? Barack Obama, incredibly popular, doing wonderful things, but would you leave him alone in a room with your kids? I'm just saying. Did you know that he might be very combustible? Yeah.
Yeah, he's flammable or something. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, you know, this is a serious issue because there are a sizable number of people that believe this stuff. And it has an effect. All of this speech has an effect. You know, the right-wingers out there, especially in right-wing talk radio, they like to point out freedom of speech. Freedom of speech, you know, don't fire Imus for saying bad things. Don't, you know, fire or cut the advertiser for Savage because he said bad things about autism. But the speech does have an effect, and we can see this in the recent case that we had out here in that church shooting that just happened. You know, that guy Adkisson, who walked into that Unitarian church, and they were having a presentation of the children's musical Annie, and he walks in that church and starts shooting people up. You know, he killed two people, wounded seven of them very seriously. And they found back at the guy's house and in some of his writings here that he wanted to target the church because of its liberal teachings, because they were so liberal about gays and lesbians being able to be in the church and had a more liberal doctrine. And so, you know, you hear people like Michael Savage saying things.
The children's minds are being raped by the homosexual mafia.
And these nutcases hear that kind of stuff. And, you know, in their mind, that justifies, well, we got to kill the liberals. They're raping our children's minds, right? This has an effect. So this guy Adkisson, he feels that, you know, the liberal teachings that all liberals should be killed because they're ruining the country, and the Democrats had tied the country's hands in the war on terror and ruined every institution in America with the aid of their media outlets. You know, because the liberals control the media. You know, that liberal country, that liberal company General Electric that controls NBC, or that liberal company, you know, a News Corp that controls Fox, you know, all those massive corporate entities that are so liberal. Yeah. Anyway, this Adkisson guy,
Then goes on to say that if he couldn't get to the leaders of the liberal movement, then he would target those who voted them into office. And that would be, I guess, children who were performing in Annie. Well, my point here is that all of this speech has an effect. And when they went to this Adkisson's guy's house, in his house, they found well-worn, highlighted copies of Michael Savage's book, Liberalism is a Mental Health Disorder, Sean Hannity's book, Let Freedom Ring, and Bill O'Reilly's book, The O'Reilly Factor. Now, that's not to say that reading these books by these guys is necessarily going to cause you to break out in a maniacal rage or something like that, but boy, it's not helping, is it? It's not helping this kind of guy. I mean, I'm not talking about censorship. I'm not saying we should censor these guys, these right-wingers, but they need to be held to account and to realize that their speech does have an effect on these people. The other effect that we're seeing here in this Christian supremacy movement that I wanted to bring up has to do with the Bush administration. And the Bush administration's Department of Health and Human Services has this new regulation they're trying to push through, this draft regulation. And what it would do is it would deny federal funding to any hospital, clinic, or health plan, or anyone, anything, that does not accommodate employees who want to opt out of participating in care that runs counter to their personal convictions. Now, we've told this story before, right? The whole pro-life pharmacy movement. You know, the idea that pharmacists shouldn't have to give out pills that are against their religious conscience. Well, that's what they're trying to codify into federal law right now. They are trying to codify here that if someone does not feel like giving out birth control pills, IUDs, or Plan B emergency contraception, and the hospital that they work at says, no, you got to do it, that's your job, the Bush administration thinks that it'd be okay to take away the federal funds from that hospital if they don't let their religious employees opt out of these different medical procedures. The draft states that these healthcare workers are, quote, required to violate their consciences by providing or assisting in the provision of controversial medicine or procedures. And furthermore, the most controversial section, this is the part where they're slipping this in, it says, quote, any of the various procedures, including the prescription, dispensing, and administration of any drug or the performance of any procedure or any other action that results in the termination of the life of a human being in utero between conception and natural birth, whether before or after implantation. So what they're trying to do here is they're trying to say, number one, it's bad. We're going to take the money away from the hospitals that won't let their medical staff opt out of performing abortions. And then in this thing, they're defining abortion as anything that terminates the life of a human being in utero, whether between conception and natural birth, whether before or after implantation. Now, that's gonna include IUDs. That's going to include regular hormonal birth control. And medical science, medical doctors, that's not how they define abortion. According to science and medical procedures, abortion is after the fertilized egg attaches to attaches to the uterine wall. Then, after it's attached to the uterine wall, then if you do something to it, then we're talking about an abortion. But fertilized egg, they're talking about the termination of fertilized eggs after conception. That doesn't even mean you're necessarily pregnant. You know, these wingers, these religious nuts here that are pushing this stuff don't realize that a woman who is sexually active, not using birth control, has lots and lots of fertilized eggs. Happens all the time. And most of these fertilized eggs don't implant themselves on the uterine wall and end up being washed out in the menstrual flow. Right? So according to this theory, this idea that life begins at conception, that makes every sexually active woman who's ever had a period a serial killer. It's a stupid point. And trying to define this birth control as abortion and then not requiring or allowing the medical professionals to opt out of it is harmful to women's health. This is just another way of putting women toward the back of the bus and treating them as second-class citizens. If you have a religious problem doing your job as a medical professional, it's time for another job. okay, when is this going to stop? When are we going to stop this? I mean, we don't let, you know, waitresses at the Hooters, if they're vegans, opt out of serving you chicken wings. You know, we don't let, you know, if you're a Muslim, you're probably not going to become a bartender, right? Because you got a problem with alcohol. If you've got a religious conviction, I completely support that right. I completely support your right to believe whatever you want to believe. However, your beliefs have consequences. And if your belief conflicts with your job, it's not much of a brave stance for you to hold up that belief if you're then going to demand everyone bend over backwards to accommodate your specific belief to the detriment of other people's rights. If you have that strong of a religious conviction that you don't want to give out birth control or anything like that, then stick by your conviction and find yourself a new job. It's as simple as that.
You know, all right. As a Buddhist, I think I was thinking of taking up a new career in the extermination business. I'm just going to go around to the right wing wacko's house, and then if they've got an infestation, I'll just say I'm going to meditate until they feel bad and go away.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It needs to stop. All right. Well, we got to round things up here for this segment. So coming up in our next segment, we've got our Lunatic Fringe Awards talking about this Christian supremacy. And I mentioned the one ad by John McCain. You're going to hear a clip in the Christian supremacy, or in the Lunatic Fringe that highlights that whole Antichrist idea. So stick around. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
We're still waiting for Bill O'Reilly's response to our Lufa Joust and Falafel Off. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the Guano Loco Neocon Chickenhawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents
The
Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. And we get to start off today with the Hall of Famer, the all-time great L. Rushbo. That's right.
Rush
Limbaugh is in our Lunatic Fringe today. You know, Rush is celebrating his 20-year anniversary on the air.
Wow.
20 years.
That's amazing, seeing as he only came to the air when he was 132.
It's amazing, yeah. And he's making, what, a $400 million contract last I checked. So let me see. That means by, 2028, I might have some money. Yay.
Yay!
Let's hope so. I could use some of that Rush Limbaugh-style money. But anyway, he was on the air for his 20th anniversary, and he got a surprise call from George W. Bush. And George W. Bush called up alongside his brother Jeb and his daddy, George H.W. Bush. And during the call, the older Bush, H.W., did not realize they were on the air and kind of let slip a little nugget of information that he probably didn't want to. So let me play that for you.
President George W. Bush calling to congratulate you on 20 years of important and excellent broadcasting.
Well, thank you, sir. You've stunned me. I'm shocked. But thank
That's
you so much.
That's hard to do.
No, I didn't.
Hey, Rush.
Mr. President, sir.
Life is good. It's wonderful. And it's great having the family up here in Maine. And all is well. Do you see our man Ailes at all?
Oh, yeah. I saw Roger at Tony Snow's funeral.
Yeah, so what he's saying there, did you see our man Ailes? He's talking about Roger Ailes here. So you've got George H.W. Bush, and Roger Ailes is the head of Fox News, by the way, right? So H.W. Bush and Limbaugh talking about, did you see our man, Roger Ailes? So, you know, these they've been Scott McClellan's come out talking about how the Bush administration was distributing right-wing talking points straight to Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and all these guys, and they've all been denying it. Oh, no, that can't be. Well, cat's kind of out of the bag there with that H.W. Bush revelation. Now, another thing that's happening in the lunatic fringe, poor Michael Savage, Michael Wiener Savage, he's still hurting. Yeah, poor Michael Savage, he's still hurting on that autism comment that he made and we played for you. He just got kicked off of another radio station. We told you last week he got kicked off a Cleveland station. He just got kicked off of Los Angeles' KGIL to be replaced by Lars Larson from up here in Portland. And also he's been dropped in Ohio, Mississippi, and Virginia, and also lost a bunch of advertisers. He lost Aflac last week. This week he lost Radio Shack and Sears. This is Michael Savage expressing his dismay.
What liberals don't understand who are attacking me right now is that today it's Michael Savage, and they're gloating. Oh, they're happy. They're very happy that they were able to use the poor parents of autistic children to attack me when I, in fact, have been more supportive of the most vulnerable children in our population than anybody else in the history of radio. That's correct. Me, Michael Savage.
Yeah, poor Michael Savage.
Wow.
Complaining that he was taken out of context and he didn't really mean it. Yeah, so couldn't happen to a better guy. All right, so let's go to some real lunatic fringe here. On the Colbert Report on Comedy Central, Toby Keith, the country singer, the one who had the feud with the Dixie Chicks, he's on promoting his new album called Beer for My Horses. Take a listen to these lyrics. Now, this is Willie Nelson. It's a duet with Willie Nelson, but these lyrics are written by Toby Keith. Take a listen to these lyrics.
Grandpappy told my pappy back in my day, son, a man had to answer for all the wicked that he done. Take all the rope in Texas, find a tall old tree, round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street.
Yeah, so go take a rope from the tallest tree, round up the bad boys, and hang them high in the street. And my grandpappy tell my pappy. Now, Toby Keith's about my age, so that would put his grandpappy at about the early 20th century. And that would be about the time when massive amounts of lynching of African Americans were going on. There was that sort of issue down there in the early 20th century in the South, especially places like Texas. So there you got a song celebrating lynching. Yay. Let's hear it for that. Celebrating lynching. And so Toby Keith went on the Colbert Report also to express just how racially sensitive he is. This is Toby Keith talking about the support for Barack Obama in the African American community.
Black people would say he don't talk, act, or carry himself as a black person. I mean,
what does that even mean?
Well, I don't know what that means, but I'm saying that's what I think that they would say. That even though the black society would pull for him, I still think that they think in the back of their mind that the only reason that he is in is because he talks, acts, and carries himself as a Caucasian.
Yeah, so Toby Keith saying that Barack Obama talks, acts, and carries himself like a Caucasian. Apparently, he's not in the restaurant saying things like this.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Kiss my ass, bust the cap on the Moet, because I don't want to hear that crap.
So, yeah, let's hear about the racial sensitivity of Toby Keith. Yeah, not acting black enough, apparently. But our winner for today, the winner of our Lunatic Fringe, is kind of a minor leaguer, guy that we haven't had on the show before, a guy named Brian Sussman out there at KSFO in San Francisco. Last segment in the Christian Supremacy, I was telling you about this whole Antichrist theme that is being played on by the right wing. Well, this is Brian Sussman.
You know, Emperor of the World, you hit it on the head, my man. Now, I will wax religy for just a moment. As I was watching that speech, I could have sworn he was running for Antichrist. He's talking about us being citizens of the world. I got news for you, dude. I'm not a citizen of the world. I live on this planet, but I'm a citizen of the United States of America. I don't take my marching orders from any world government or world entity or world leader.
So Sussman reinforcing that whole Barack as the Antichrist meme. And then this whole citizen of the world here, you know, when Barack went out there and was talking in Berlin and such. Well, first of all, he got it wrong. You know, Barack didn't say he's a citizen of the world. The quote is, he's a citizen, a proud citizen of the United States, and a fellow citizen of the world. So he opens up by saying he's a citizen of the United States. And if he's got a problem with that, does Sussman have a problem when Reagan went to Germany and Reagan said, quote, I speak today as both a citizen of the United States and of the world? Yeah, of course it's okay when a Republican says it, but when Obama says it, he's the Antichrist. Well, he got a little guff for this. This Brian Sussman got a little pushback on this, and this was his response the very next day.
We also need to talk a little bit more about Barack. Of course, I'm being lampooned by the left for my comments regarding Barack. And I, of course, said, gee, what's the guy doing, running for Antichrist? Now I'm going to get into something that is probably equally as offensive to some. If Barack Obama were on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence for a jury of his peers to pronounce him guilty? I doubt it.
Yeah, so he's saying here that Barack isn't Christian enough, huh? So Brian Sussman, for stoking the fires of religious hatred and taking talking points from the Guano Loco American Taliban, you are the winner of this week's... Here's the Russ Belville Show. We're right back after this.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
From the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hour 2 of the Russ Belville Show. Glad to have you here on this fabulous, fabulous weekend, and I hope you're enjoying your weekend here. And, of course, joining us from across the continent over there in Washington, D.C., taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL, our good friend, our favorite immigrant worker from London, England, the man who week after week does me a lemon by reminding me that calling him bent as a 9-pound note is rather daft and not cricket, our good friend Stevie Lee on the board.
Thank you very much, sir. It's a pleasure to be here, as always. And, hey, no more bowling from the pavilion end for you. Yes.
Okay.
You cheeky bugger.
I wonder, over in the UK, do they have lists of American slang that they make fun of?
I'm trying to think. You'd have to have like an alternative radical Russ Belville show, wouldn't
there
you?
There we go. That's right. It'd be like Bizarro World with Superman, you know?
And exactly.
The Bizarro Radical Russ, yeah.
It'd be like the Cheeky Charlie show or something like that.
There we go, Cheeky Charlie. Sure, sure. Hey, we got all sorts of interesting stuff happening here in the country, and one of the ones, of course, everyone's paying attention to is the price of oil, the price of gas these days.
Oil, that is. Black gold. Texas tea.
And so along those lines, let me just report to you ExxonMobil, the world's largest oil company. ExxonMobil reported its second quarter earnings for the year yesterday, and the company made $11.68 billion in profit this quarter, the largest quarterly profit ever made by any U.S. corporation in history. That's right, world record profit, $11.68 billion. That works out to $1,500 every second for the entire quarter. $1,500 every second. And that's 14% more than they made in the first quarter. So it's getting better and better and better for the big oil companies. Now, this was actually less than Wall Street thought that they would make. Wall Street was expecting them to make $144 billion overall revenue, and they only made $138 billion. So the stock price actually went down a little bit because they didn't make quite enough money. And, of course, the other companies are right up there, too. ConocoPhillips had $5.4 billion net income for the quarter. British Petroleum, a net profit of $9.47 billion. And Shell, $11.6 billion. So, yeah, these companies making money hand over fist. And have you noticed lately how the gas prices have gone down a little bit and the price of oil has gone down a little bit? You know, these oil companies, every time we complain about the price of gas, they always come back and say, well, it's a question of supply and demand, and you know, the other oil countries are shutting down supply, and there's so much demand in China, and oh, we can't control it, it's beyond our control, it's the market forces. Yeah, sure. In my opinion here, I think we're getting Enroned. Okay, it's this oil speculation. It's these markets that have been allowed to run unfettered without much regulation or oversight. And this is shown in the fact that the transportation department shows that over the last 7 months, you know, since these gas prices have topped $4 a gallon, Americans have reduced their driving by more than 40 billion miles. Because of the high gas prices, they drove 3.7% fewer miles in May than they did a year earlier, more than double the 1.8% drop-off seen in April. So, as the prices have gotten high, have they gotten into the 425 range, people have cut back on driving and demanded less gas, and, whoa, what do you know? The price has gone down. Yeah, it's like in my neighborhood here, we had gas prices there at about $4.25. They dropped down to about $4.09 lately. So, yeah, for some reason, they don't have a whole lot of control over this. And yet, when they've tightened the screws just enough to milk out every last penny from the American consumers, and we finally start to feel the pinch and start to cut back, oh, price comes down. Isn't that amazing? What an incredible coincidence. Not. Now, the other thing about this, too, is they're using this pressure here on the gas prices to threaten, or not threaten, but to demand that we do some more offshore exploration. Don't you love it when they say that? Let's do some offshore oil exploration, as if Dora the Explorer is going to be going out there.
It sounds like such a jolly adventure, doesn't it?
Let's go explore, right? No, it's drilling, right? It's drilling in the middle of the ocean. And we've had the conservatives been going around the talk show circuits here, too, talking about how, oh, well, after Katrina, there was never a drop of oil spilled. You know, this is like, we've had 7, 8, 9 of these guys come out and say, oh, after Katrina, not a drop was spilled. Even though thousands of gallons of oil were spilled, and there were like hundreds of different instances where there was off oil affecting the coast there in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast after Katrina, so the lie patrol is out in force here, trying to convince people that we need to drill offshore. This is the oil industry getting in its last chip. You know, cashing in its last chip from the Cheney-Burton maladministration here before the Obama administration takes over. And so the Republicans now are threatening to hold their breath and turn blue if we don't do anything about offshore drilling here. And the sad thing is that Barack Obama is starting to kind of capitulate a little bit on this. Most recently in St. Petersburg, Florida, Barack Obama said he'd be willing to support limited additional offshore drilling if that's what it takes to enact a comprehensive policy to foster fuel-efficient autos and develop alternative energy. So basically, the Republicans right now are saying, we won't raise CAFE standards, we won't get behind solar or wind power, we won't do anything unless you give us what we want on this offshore oil drilling. And the sad part, too, is that these oil companies already have tens of millions of acres of offshore oil area that they have leased that they haven't even explored yet, right? They just want more. They want to have it all. They want to hold on to all of it. Go explore the oil leases you've already got, and then you can come back and talk about how you need more. It's just disgusting that the Republican idea here to get us oil junkies off of our oil addiction is to go find us some more oil. You might as well go get some more crack for the crackhead, so, you know, to try to cure the addiction. This is not the way to go. And for Barack Obama to even be coming close to the line on this, to talk about how he might capitulate and allow this, once again, compromise that I cannot believe in. All right, coming up in our next segment, we've got a very special guest coming on the show. Congressman Barney Frank will be joining us to discuss his bill, H.R. 5843, that would end the prohibition of marijuana for adults. This is the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. And 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Not some pot legalizing, tax hiking, government expanding, latte drinking, sushi eating, Volvo driving, New York Times reading, body piercing, Hollywood loving, left wing freak show. He drives a Jeep.
Ah, yes. Welcome back to the show. It's 18 after the hour. Now, in 2006, almost 830,000 Americans were arrested for marijuana, and 89% of those arrests were for simple possession only. We spend $7.7 billion every year in this country enforcing anti-pot laws, while studies show taxing pot like liquor could raise $14 billion every year. For 71 years, our government has endorsed prison times and fines for adults who choose marijuana over martinis, but our next guest seeks to finally change that policy. Congressman Barney Frank has represented Massachusetts' 4th District since 1981 and is a champion of civil rights on Capitol Hill. This Wednesday, he announced his bill to end federal penalties for the personal possession of marijuana, the first such legislation introduced in about 30 years. So thank you for joining us on the show, Representative Frank.
You're welcome. I'm glad to have a chance to continue to carry the word.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you've been a champion of this issue in one form or another. I know you've sponsored the state's rights to medical marijuana bill, which has had some trouble getting through the House. So what encouraged you to move forward now with full decriminalization, which is much more controversial?
Well, it is a position I, frankly, have been advocating for, because I did this when I was in the state legislature in Massachusetts in 1973 and 1974. I thought now it was time to be able to do it. Look, I've always felt this, but you don't want to raise an issue, at least I don't want to raise an issue, if I think the overwhelming reaction is going to be negative, because people can kind of get locked in a negative way. I have felt for some time now that the public is clearly ahead of the politicians on this one. That's not always the case. There are issues where I think the public sometimes doesn't see through some propaganda, but it did occur to me that the public, and particularly young people, were ahead. It's also, frankly, probably because we have the internet now. You know, this is not an issue that the newspapers and networks are going to give a lot of attention to, but the internet exists as a way to communicate with people who care about this. And I particularly, frankly, I've been pleased to see that a lot of younger people have gotten, it seems, more interested in politics these days, probably because Senator Obama appeals to them, also because of the environmental issue, and, you know, that's an obvious one. When I speak to student audiences, I say, you know, look, in terms of global warming, you know, by the time it really gets bad, I'll be dead. So I would assume you guys would be the ones that want to deal with it. So it did seem to me this is a good time to begin this discussion, because I think the public is ready to educate my colleagues, and because you got a lot of young people who will join in.
Now, you're close to the end of the session, so it's likely that this bill would be heard and debated in the next Congress. Do you feel that there's going to be a significant difference in the opinion of the upcoming Congress on this issue?
There will be. Look, I don't think we're going to be able to get it passed in the next Congress or two. I am optimistic we'll ultimately be doing this. What you really need to do is begin the conversation. I need my colleagues to be hearing from people. That's why I'm really glad that you know, we're able to do this, and I've done some other radio interviews. A number of my colleagues already, because there's been some publicity on it, came to me and said, hey, I was in my district and, you know, somebody said, but I signed on to your bill, tell me about it. So what we need, this is one where the public's going to have to give the lead to the members of Congress, but I think that can happen.
Now, this debate is one that's kind of different than a lot of other debates on Capitol Hill, because you're going to get significant pushback on this from the executive branch in the form of the ONDCP, which is mandated by law to oppose any sort of measures that might decriminalize or
yeah,
legislate cannabis.
I think that will diminish when we are rid of the Bush administration and its extreme right-wing operation. I must say it is interesting at a time when the administration tells us they can't afford to put money into cleaning up Superfund sites or helping us with public transportation or providing adequate health care even to veterans who are coming back from Iraq, that they can spend all this money on an office that's been very ineffective. And, you know, the idea that a paid employee of the federal government was out there handing out this propaganda, I have no objection to it in principle. I think people should be able to speak, but it is an example of the waste of time and effort.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there are 12 states in America now that regulate the use of medical marijuana, and California in particular has been victimized by DEA raids on those dispensaries. How would this bill affect
If this bill passed, either bill, because you have the medical marijuana bill, this is a border bill, it would say that at the very least, well, two ways. If this bill passed, the patients would no longer be subject to harassment. You would need the medical marijuana bill to protect the clinics as well. So I'd want to see both bills passed. But as you know, as you said, you know, I'll give credit to Janet Reno, and she was Attorney General. She did not do this. John Ashcroft became Attorney General in this right-wing administration and started prosecuting very sick people who were following California law to take marijuana. Really a despicable set of activity, it seems to me. either bill would stop that with regard to the patients. You'd need both bills to be able to protect the clinics.
Okay. Now, just north of California in Oregon, there's some cannabis supporters there that are putting together a measure that would tax and regulate the sales of marijuana through liquor stores in the state. Would this bill help in that realm, or wouldn't have to go
farther? It would allow them to, I take it back. You'd have to go beyond that because this bill is for personal use and nonprofit distribution and effect sharing. I agree with that proposal. But, you know, I want to have the debate about the basic principle about whether or not the federal government should be regulating people's private lives. Now, ultimately, you would want to get to that, but I don't want it to be distorted into, you're going to have these massive distributions. I mean, the principle, by the way, I want to address one argument, which I hope some of the people listening will also be able to use. One of the questions I get is, well, why are you encouraging the use of marijuana? And the answer is, I'm not. There's this notion that's really very antithetical to the kind of government we want to live in. It says that, human activity is divided into two categories. One, things that should be criminal. Two, things that the government is encouraging. And there are some things I want to encourage. I do want to encourage energy conservation, and I think we should encourage people to exercise and, eat healthy in some ways. But on the whole, the view ought to be that what you choose to do on your leisure time is your own. And the fact that it isn't illegal doesn't mean I'm encouraging it. People do a lot of things in this society that I don't do, that if you ask my advice, I'd say, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but I shouldn't make them criminal. And that's what we're saying with smoking marijuana. This notion that if the government doesn't send you to jail for it, the government's telling you to do it, misunderstands the nature of a free government.
Good point. That's a black and white thinking there. Now, some critics might point out here that the bill, as it's written right now, allows the possession of up to 100 grams of marijuana, about 3.5 ounces. And some people might point out that that's an extreme amount. How did you come up with that amount?
Well, we tried to have a margin that people wouldn't be unduly harassed for. To be honest, the details at this point are less important than getting the principle out there.
Okay.
And, you don't want people who have a personal use stash to get caught up in this in a way. As I said, there's no exactitude here, and I would hope we could debate the principle. Obviously, we'd be flexible on the specifics when we got to it.
Okay. Another line of attack that I can envision here is people saying that by decriminalizing the possession without doing anything about the sales, all you do is create more of a market for the black market that already exists that causes all the harms of marijuana.
Well, we couldn't be doing that. Anybody with any sense of reality understands that there's a flourishing black market now. Because one of the oddest defenses I get of the law is, don't repeal the law, it's not being enforced. And that's a terrible way to deal with the law. You don't want to tell police officers and others, look, we don't really care about this law, so we're going to keep it on the books, but we're going to tell you not to enforce it. I mean, the notion that there's any deterrent effect in the law right now, I think it's very small.
Okay. Now, you're in Massachusetts, up in the Northeast, and I'm calling you from Portland, Oregon, out in the West, and our areas of the country seem to be a lot more tolerant to marijuana use and its users. Why is there, in your opinion, such opposition in Washington and in some other places in the country to this notion?
Well, I think it's cultural lag. Look, people have seen drugs do bad things to people, but in particular, marijuana became identified first in the 30s and later in the 60s with kind of countercultural activity. It was identified with musicians who engaged in interracial dating at a time in the 30s when the prejudices on race were so strong. In the 60s, it particularly became identified with people who were against the war. And I think that's why it's hard to understand in rational terms why you have this crusade on the books with people like the ONDCP against marijuana and not at all against alcohol. So I think it has to do with cultural things. But the other point I would make is this. The politicians today are people most of whose careers began 20, 30, and 40 years ago. I think the average voter today is much less obsessed with this. And indeed, as you look at the younger people, they think it's silly. So I think this is one where, particularly over the years coming forward, the politicians, as I said, are going to be educated by the public to lose their their fear of doing the right thing.
Now, Congressman Frank, when you first announced this on the Bill Maher show, you had made the point that you've been in office for so long now that you really don't care what other people might think of you doing this. What do you think the political ramifications might be, though, for other?
Well, I did say I thought I could get away with it now, and I may have been misinterpreted. What I really meant was I think that we can have a public debate now where there'll be a lot of support for it. Personally, look, people, when I first ran for office, people used this against me because I'd advocated it in the state legislature, so it was used against me in campaigns of 1882. I genuinely believe that the average citizen understands that this is a silly law. As I said, I think the public's ahead of the politicians, so what I was trying to do was to get to my colleagues and say, look, don't be afraid of doing the right thing here.
Okay. Now, as far as the nuts and bolts of Congress, where does this bill head next? Has it made it to committee? Will it be assigned?
It will be assigned to committee because I'm dealing with criminal penalties. It'll go to the Judiciary Committee primarily. I don't expect anything to happen for the rest of this year, but I would hope that we could have some hearings on it next year. You know, look, as you mentioned, we've had the state's rights to medical marijuana law. That started out with a few votes, a handful of votes. It's now getting 40% of the House up in 170, 180 range. It's not there yet, but it's moving, and I think the same thing will happen here once we start talking about it.
All right. Congressman, thank you for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Working class and damn proud of it. This is the Russ Belville Show.
All right, welcome back to the show, 35 after the hour, and I want to give big thanks to Representative Barney Frank for joining us in our last segment for the show. My first interview of a major political figure like that, and sure was a lot of fun, and my honor to be able to do that interview. And like we were mentioning in that last segment, Representative Frank has sponsored this bill called H.R. 5842, and it's a bill to... 5843, excuse me, and it's a bill to end federal penalties for the adult possession of marijuana. Now, what this bill would do is it'd make it so that anyone in the United States, any American citizen, I guess any adult, over 21, would be free from any sort of federal penalty if they were caught with 100 grams or less of marijuana. And it would allow the nonprofit transfers of up to 1 ounce. So you could give up to an ounce to a friend with no penalty whatsoever. Now, the bill wouldn't end any sort of penalties for trafficking in large amounts, or sales would still be illegal. And the states would still be free to enact whatever legislation they would choose to enact regarding marijuana. And my question for the listeners today is just this. I mean, would you support that kind of bill? Would you support H.R. 5843, this bill that would end federal penalties for personal marijuana possession? You know, I brought up some facts at the beginning of the segment of how the federal government right now is spending $7.7 billion a year to enforce just the marijuana laws in this country. And there was a study that came out of Harvard University that showed if you taxed and regulated marijuana as if it were hard alcohol, you know, like hard liquor, that we could raise between the savings in law enforcement and then from the income from taxation, we could raise between $10 and $14 billion every year for this country. So is it past time that we finally get rid of this stupid prohibition on marijuana? Would you support the bill that would enable people to have it for personal possession so long as they don't sell? Or do you think we should go further? Do you think we should actually tax and regulate marijuana as if it were hard alcohol? Should we go more than just a decriminalization? Should we go to full-scale legalization? You know, this is a topic that's been kind of controversial for many years, and a lot of the naysayers on this topic have often pointed out that the American public is not for this. They say the American public's not for it. And our phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. That's 888-7-RADICAL. Let me know what you think. Is it time to legalize? Is it time to decriminalize? Or is the law working? Does marijuana need to stay illegal? Is this something that could cause huge problems in America? Would we end up with being a nation of addicts if we legalize marijuana? I'd love to know your opinions on that. Phone number is 888-7-RADICAL. And the other thing about this too is that we need to understand that the government in this issue is lying to you, right? You know, I bring this up in a lot of instances. I'll point out, you know, how politicians will fabricate or extend the truth or shade the truth. But when it comes to this issue, the issue of marijuana prohibition, they are lying to you, and by design. What a lot of people don't understand is that the Office of National Drug Control Policy, you know, what we call the Drug Czar's Office, is mandated by law to oppose any efforts to change marijuana policy or drug policy in this country, despite any facts or evidence that might be uncovered. They are required by their statutory mandate to oppose any efforts. So this is why you're seeing how, you know, in situations like California and Oregon and these other 10 states that have medicinal marijuana, and they have all of these testimonials from people that can show, you know, with multiple sclerosis, HIV, AIDS, cancer, and so on, these people that are getting genuine medical benefit from this. And yet, the ONDCP has to keep coming out and telling lies about it in order to continue their mandate of opposing any efforts to change America's drug laws. And real people are getting hurt in this drug war. You know, a lot of times when I bring this subject up, I get the feeling that people are out there listening and thinking, well, you know, I don't smoke dope. This doesn't have anything to do with me. But it does. It has a lot to do with you. Take the issue of gas prices, for example. When we look at the escalating gas prices and our reliance on foreign sources of oil, a lot of times what the politicians will come back and start talking about is ethanol. Oh, let's grow our way out of this problem. Let's grow ethanol, right? Well, of course, a lot of that's politically driven in your farm states, your farm belt states like Iowa and such, where they are, you know, they're trying to get more corn sold. And corn ethanol is one of the worst forms of energy that you can get. It actually produces more pollution to get it than you'd save from bringing up the ethanol. But when they talk about this, they start talking about other alternative crops and then how they might use switchgrass or they might use canola oil or whatever. They never mention hemp, right? Hemp, the non-drug cousin of marijuana that's also made illegal by the DEA. And hemp is such a far better material for making this biodiesel. But because of this stupid prohibition, we don't even get to discuss it. It's sickening. Phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. Let's get on the line and start talking to some people here in America. We've got Dave in Chicago on the line. Dave, welcome back to the Russ Belville Show.
Hello, sir. I'm Matthew Chapp and a Nazi wanker.
Oh, Stevie, it's starting to spread, man.
It is. It's insidious.
It's going good. What's up, Dave? What's on your mind?
Okay, good. Yeah, at the top of the show, you were talking about Rush Limbaugh on his 20th year. And
oh, yeah.
Kicked around his age a little bit, and I wanted to make sure in the interest of fairness and accuracy that we get it right. So let's, he was 20 on the air for 20 years, you said? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so five and then carry the two. Okay, so Rush Limbaugh is 666 right now. Yeah. And, about this Bruce Ivins guy.
Yeah, the anthrax scientist out there in Maryland, right?
Yeah, he never had access to the anthrax to be able to take it. So they're talking about how this guy probably looks suicided, just like the Paltrow woman, the madam. Do I have that name right?
Yeah, yeah, and or Marilyn Monroe or any number of people that supposedly committed suicide. Yeah.
Same old, man.
Yeah. This is scary. This anthrax thing, I was reading up on this. This Ivins guy who just apparently, they say, committed suicide was one of the top researchers at their biological weapons lab. And you know, now they're saying he was the lead. They were about to charge him, you know, in these attacks. The thing about this anthrax stuff that's so scary here is that the anthrax thing was what cemented the American fear after 9/11. You know, 9/11 happened and we were all terrified out of our minds, But there's a part of your brain that can look at that and go, okay, big, big attack, but, you know, next time they'll stop it because they'll have F-16s and we'll have more, you know, response to it. But the anthrax thing, I think that was what really set the whole terrorism and fear the Muslims. That's right. What set it in our heads.
Then when you connect all the dots where this guy just got suicided at a convenient time with elections coming up and how Daschle and Leahy got anthrax and Paltrow, you connect all these dots, it just stinks.
Yeah.
It just stinks.
Yeah, that's right. These anthrax letters that came out to Daschle and Leahy, Tom Brokaw got one, and throughout all of them, they all got these notes in here, and the whole point was to try to tie this into Muslim terrorism, right? In the Tom Brokaw note, it read, 9/11/01, this is next, take penicillin now, death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great. The Pat Leahy note read, we have anthrax, you die now, are you afraid? Death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great. So if the government is now telling us that the lead researcher at the U.S. government's weapons lab was in charge of anthrax, was supposedly behind this, then what we're looking at now is the U.S. government purposefully trying to tie the anthrax attacks into Muslim terrorism to get us into enough fear to invade Iraq. And this is an unreported story that desperately needs more attention.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of conspiracy theories like that, and yes, it is a conspiracy theory, but when these things stack up enough and you connect these dots, now, I wanted to call you last week. I wasn't able to get through. They were talking about Barack Obama and a couple problems that he's having. The metal detectors being pulled in Dallas, Texas, an hour before he went on. The chute being deployed on his McDonnell Douglas MD-81. Where they had to land in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You never know how a plane is going to land when there's an emergency landing. So you have to be able to operate that chute remote control.
Yeah. It's scary. And all I got to say is, Barack Obama, if you're listening, please don't get into any small prop planes anytime in the next few months. That definitely.
And also the Iraq trip, when Bush or anybody else goes over there, he gets in nice and quiet. You hear about it when he's coming out. You know, all the broadcasts were, Barack Obama's going to Iraq, Barack.
Yeah.
You know, they're screaming it to the top of their lungs.
That's a good point.
I don't know if you like to get into that conspiracy theory stuff, but.
Yeah, we will a little bit.
Something stinks.
Yeah, something definitely stinks in there. And thanks, Dave, for your call. I appreciate it. We got more callers hanging out on the line here, and we got to get to a short break here. So let us take our break. And for Mike, Bob, Trish, Jay, hold on just a little bit. We'll be right back at the top of the next segment with you guys. This is the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. And 620KPOJ.com.
Call now at 1-888-7-RADICAL. We'll even speak slowly for conservatives.
Welcome back. 50 after the hour. We talked a little bit about that anthrax stuff. Want to bring up a couple quick points, and then we'll get to the calls. On that anthrax story, you got to remember, right after 9/11, when these anthrax attacks hit, they went to Senator Leahy and Daschle. Tom Brokaw got some other media outlets got some of this anthrax mailed to them. And how quickly the news media jumped on the idea that Iraq might be behind this. Back in October 2001, ABC's Brian Ross reported that the anthrax contained bentonite, and this was a mark of Iraqi WMDs, that this bentonite identified it as Iraqi anthrax, and this was based on the sourcing from four well-placed sources. Well, turns out that the government now is thinking that that Ivans now, this guy who just committed suicide, might have been a prime suspect here. So who exactly were these four well-placed sources that were trying to get the news media to parrot the whole Iraq anthrax line? Also, consider this. About 5 weeks after 9/11, John W. McCain is on the David Letterman show and had this to say about the anthrax.
How are things going in Afghanistan now?
I think we're doing fine. We'll be fine. The second phase
If I could just make it very quickly, the second phase is Iraq. There is some indication, and I don't have the conclusions, but some of this anthrax may, and I emphasize may, have come from Iraq.
Oh, is that right?
If that may be the case, then that's when some tough decisions are going to have to be made, too.
Yeah, so they're constantly pushing for going to Iraq back there and trying to paint the anthrax attacks. You know, all the 9/11 conspiracy theorists that are out there, I think this is the one to pay attention to, these anthrax attacks. There's something definitely fishy going on there. All right, let's go to the phones at 888-7-RADICAL. We've got Mike in Virginia. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Am I on?
What's on your mind, Mike?
Yes, I was just going to make a comment. Right when I first tuned in, you said something that some reverend out in San Francisco is trying to claim Barack Obama as the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Christians not to vote for him.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually funny because if you actually take the time to read Revelation, it actually, the Antichrist is like a 7-year period. Then the world turns into a utopia pretty much.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ actually rules it himself, and the Christian right would actually ascend into heaven during the rapture.
Oh.
So this is kind of funny. They're trying to use that as a way to get those people not to vote for him, but in reality, it'd actually be, if he was the Antichrist, it'd be the best thing ever to happen to him.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And
you really got to pick up a book. They actually got to read it, though. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. So if we vote for Barack Obama, all the heavy-duty right-wing Christians may disappear? Talk about your good reasons to vote for Obama.
You go straight to heaven.
I'm actually really looking forward to the rapture as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Mike. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you know, and that whole rapture idea that, you know, the moment will come and all the Christians will be called to heaven all of a sudden. My theory is that's why they put the little fish on the back of their cars.
Exactly.
So that, you know, if you're driving around, you know, you'll know to watch out for that car because at any moment it could be running amok. You know, the driver may suddenly disappear.
Along those lines, I was thinking, you know, when the rapture does come and all the good Christians get called to heaven, and I can say to God, so can I just take any of these cars then?
Really?
And God can say to me, yeah, just the ones with the fish on the back.
There you go. All right, let's go back to 888-7-RADICAL. We've got Bob in Dallas, Texas. Bob, welcome to the show. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up on your mind there, Bob?
I'm afraid the powers that be are going to keep the people who believe everything should be repealed and decriminalized down. There's money out there, and the more money they got, the longer it's going to take.
Yeah.
People have to stand up and take action, and you don't see anybody taking action now for all the wrongs that are being committed against this country now.
Mm. That's a very, very good point. Yeah, and speaking of that, you know, the war on drugs and marijuana being a way for the government to make money, it's not that they're making so much money off the marijuana, it's the incarceration and the prosecution of the smokers of marijuana. The war on drugs, 75% of it is marijuana. If they didn't have the marijuana smokers, they wouldn't have enough hard drug addicts to justify all the SWAT teams and all the draconian laws. So that's my theory on that.
But you also mentioned hemp. Didn't a family chemical, a chemically owned company have something to do with keeping?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the DuPont family. When DuPont first came up with nylon, which of course is a petrochemical
byproduct,
right? When they came up with nylon, that's when hemp became illegal back in the 1930s and started, you know, 1910s, 1920s, and when they started to get rid of it. And they had to call it marijuana because everybody knew what hemp was. They knew what hemp was. Hemp was for canvas, hemp was for rope, hemp was for lots of good things. So they called it a Mexican slang term to use racism to try to get people to vote against it. So that's how that turned out. Thank you, Bob, for your call.
I got a couple other I got to get to here real quick.
Just a couple minutes left in the show. So let's go to Trish in Louisville. Trish, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. Louisville.
Sorry.
Well, the last fellow just made a point, but I have a concern that probably a reason why marijuana has not been legal is because lobbyists for alcohol, lobbyists for the pharmaceuticals are very, very strong in keeping marijuana out because it's an inexpensive sort of cure for pain, and that would really rub the pharmaceutical industry the wrong way, as well as the alcohol, you know, we've got plenty of alcoholism in our country, and boy, that we need to get rid of that. There's a petition online that represents Barney Frank's bill. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people will go. I don't remember what it is, but I'm sure you can Google it.
Oh, yeah. I'll have links to that up on our website at RadicalRust.com. And thanks for your call, Trish. Yeah.
Sure.
Interesting thing about that is that, you know, that group, the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, that puts out those, you know, fried egg, you know, your brain on drugs type of ads, those kind of ads. The major contributors to the Partnership for the Drug-Free America were the alcohol and tobacco industries not wanting any competition. So think about that. All right, let's go back here. One more call. We've got Jay in Texas, driving through Texas. Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Russ.
Real quick, all we got about topics, a minute.
Yeah, all good topics, good show. I can't really add a whole lot to that, but I do believe that the war on drugs is mainly a governmental action to just make money. You know, you have so many people being incarcerated, and, you know, it's ridiculous. If people are actually having positive effects from using medicinal marijuana, that kind of tells you right there.
Yeah, yeah, sure does. You know, and
I mean, Nixon had a survey done, sent out people to try to prove why marijuana was bad, and they couldn't find anything wrong with it. I can't quote the exact study or anything, but there again, you know, it's just it's collusion in high places in the government. They don't want it to be legal for those reasons. It's nothing legitimate, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much, Jay, for that opinion. I appreciate that. Yeah, the study was the 1972 Schaefer Commission report called Marijuana, a Signal of Misunderstanding. They got Raymond Schaefer, who was this conservative governor, to try to prove marijuana was bad. He came back and said, we ought to decriminalize it, make it legal. And so Nixon ignored that. All right, I'm Radical Russ. We got to tie things up here for the show. It's 5 hours a show, 2 hours of time. We'll be back next weekend at this same exact time. So please tune in. Send me an email, radicalruss@gmail.com. Peace.